Welcome to your A-Level PE Study Podcast. I'm your tutor, and today we're diving deep into one of the most fascinating and high-value topics in EdExcel Component 2, personality, anxiety, and aggression. This topic sits in Section 5.1 of the specification, and I promise you, once you understand how these psychological constructs connect, you'll be able to tackle even the toughest 15-mark questions with real confidence. So let's get started. First, let's set the scene. Sports psychology is all about understanding the mind of the athlete. Why does one footballer thrive under pressure while another freezes? Why does a tennis player who's been calm all match suddenly lose their temper? The answers lie in personality, anxiety, and aggression, and that's exactly what we're exploring today. Let's begin with personality theories. There are three main approaches you need to know, and examiners will credit you for accurately distinguishing between them. The first is trait theory. This approach, associated with Eysenck and Cattell, suggests that personality is innate. You're born with it. Traits are stable, consistent, and cross-situational. So if someone is naturally aggressive, they'll be aggressive on the football pitch, in the office, and at home. The key theorist here is Eysenck, who proposed two dimensions, introversion versus extroversion, and neuroticism versus stability. Now, and this is really important, Eysenck linked these personality dimensions to the reticular activating system, or ROS. The ROS is a part of the brainstem that regulates arousal levels. Introverts have a naturally higher baseline level of cortical arousal, meaning their RAS is already quite active. They therefore prefer quieter, lower stimulation environments. Extroverts, on the other hand, have a lower baseline arousal. Their RAS needs more stimulation to reach an optimal level. This is why extroverts tend to seek out exciting, high arousal sporting environments like team sports or contact sports. The second approach is social learning theory associated with Bandura. This theory argues that personality is not innate. It's learned through observation and imitation of role models, particularly those we identify with and who are reinforced for their behavior. In sport, a young rugby player might observe a professional player using aggression, and if that behavior is rewarded, say by winning a tackle, the young player is more likely to imitate it. This is called vicarious reinforcement. The key phrase to remember here is, behavior is modeled, reinforced, and reproduced. The third approach, and the one most widely accepted today, is the interactionist approach associated with Lewin. Lewin's famous formula is B equals F of P times E. Behavior is a function of the person multiplied by the environment. This means that behavior in sport is the result of both our personality traits and the specific situation we find ourselves in. A normally calm golfer might become anxious and aggressive in a high-stakes final round. Their trait personality interacts with the environmental pressure to produce a specific behavior. Examiners love this formula. Use it explicitly in your answers. Now let's move on to anxiety. This is where many candidates lose marks, so listen carefully. Arousal and anxiety are not the same thing. Arousal is a neutral, physiological, and psychological state of alertness and readiness. It's neither good nor bad. Anxiety, however, is a negative emotional state characterized by feelings of worry, nervousness, and apprehension. Candidates who conflate these two terms will lose marks. There are two types of anxiety you must know. Somatic anxiety refers to the physical symptoms, increased heart rate, muscle tension, sweating, butterflies in the stomach. Cognitive anxiety refers to the mental symptoms, negative thoughts, worry, loss of concentration, fear of failure. There's also an important distinction between trait anxiety and state anxiety. Trait anxiety is a stable personality characteristic. Some people are generally more anxious than others. State anxiety is a temporary emotional condition. The anxiety you feel right before a big match, for example. Now, the multidimensional anxiety theory proposed by Martens is crucial. This theory distinguishes between cognitive and somatic anxiety and makes a really interesting prediction. As competition approaches, somatic anxiety rises sharply but then decreases once the competition begins because the body's physical response kicks in and the athlete focuses on performance. Cognitive anxiety, however, remains high and relatively stable throughout. This is why a gymnast might feel their heart racing before their routine but then settle physically once they start, yet their mind continues to race with worry throughout the performance. Now let's look at the three main arousal theories. The inverted U hypothesis, proposed by Yerkes and Dodson, suggests that performance improves as arousal increases up to an optimal point and then declines as arousal continues to rise. Picture a bell curve. At low arousal, the athlete is undermotivated. At the optimal midpoint, performance peaks. At high arousal, performance deteriorates. This theory is intuitive and easy to apply, but it has significant limitations. It implies a gradual, symmetrical decline in performance, which doesn't match what we often see in real sport, and it doesn't account for the role of cognitive anxiety. This is where catastrophe theory, proposed by Hardy and Fazy, improves on the inverted U. Catastrophe theory agrees that moderate arousal improves performance, but it adds a critical condition, cognitive anxiety. When cognitive anxiety is low, the relationship between arousal and performance does follow an inverted U pattern. But when cognitive anxiety is high, the athlete can perform well up to a point. And then if arousal exceeds a critical threshold, performance doesn't gradually decline. It catastrophically collapses. There's a sudden, dramatic drop, like falling off a cliff. Think of a penalty taker who's been performing well all match, but under the enormous cognitive pressure of a shootout, suddenly over-aroused, completely loses their technique. That's a catastrophically. Crucially, recovery is not immediate. The athlete must significantly reduce arousal before performance can return. This is a key evaluative point that will earn you AO3 marks. The third theory is the individual zone of optimal functioning, or eyes off, proposed by Hanan. This theory rejects the idea of a single optimal arousal point for all athletes. Instead, it argues that each individual has their own zone, a bandwidth of arousal within which they perform best. Some athletes perform best at high arousal, a boxer, for example. Others perform best at low arousal, a snooker player or archer. The eyes off is highly individualized and is determined through performance profiling. This is a more practical and athlete-centered theory than the inverted U, and examiners will credit you for evaluating it as such. Now let's tackle aggression. There are three key theories here. The instinct theory, associated with Lorenz and Freud, suggests that aggression is innate, a natural drive that builds up and must be released. In sport, this release is called catharsis. However, research does not strongly support this theory, and it's largely been replaced by more nuanced models. The frustration-aggression hypothesis, proposed by Dollard and colleagues, suggests that aggression is always preceded by frustration, and frustration always leads to aggression. The antecedents, the triggers, are goal-blocking events. A striker who keeps missing chances becomes frustrated, and that frustration drives aggressive behavior. However, this theory is too simplistic. Not all frustration leads to aggression, and not all aggression is preceded by frustration. The aggressive cue hypothesis, proposed by Berkowitz, refined this model. Berkowitz agreed that frustration creates a readiness to aggress, but argued that aggression only occurs when specific environmental cues are present. These cues are stimuli associated with aggression, a rival player, a hostile crowd, or a weapon-like implement such as a cricket bat. The presence of these cues triggers the aggressive response. This is a more nuanced and widely supported theory. Now, a critical distinction you must get right: the difference between hostile aggression, instrumental aggression, and assertive behavior. Hostile aggression involves intent to harm, with the harm itself being the goal. A player who punches an opponent out of anger is showing hostile aggression. This is outside the rules and morally wrong. Instrumental aggression also involves intent to harm, but the harm is a means to an end. A rugby player who makes a crunching legal tackle with the intent to intimidate the opponent is showing instrumental aggression. The goal is winning, not the harm itself. This is still aggressive, but maybe within the rules. Assertive behavior involves no intent to harm. It's forceful, energetic play that uses legitimate physical effort within the rules. A basketball player who drives hard to the basket using strength and determination is being assertive, not aggressive. Examiners will specifically test this distinction, and many candidates confuse assertive behavior with instrumental aggression. Remember, assertive behavior has zero intent to harm. Now let's talk exam tips and common mistakes. The biggest mistake candidates make is confusing arousal with anxiety. Always define them separately. Arousal is neutral and physiological. Anxiety is negative and emotional. The second big mistake is describing the inverted U theory without critiquing it. In any extended answer, you must acknowledge its limitations, particularly that it doesn't account for cognitive anxiety and doesn't explain the sudden performance collapse that catastrophe theory describes. Third, when discussing aggression, always specify whether you mean hostile or instrumental. Generic references to aggression will not earn full marks. Fourth, always apply your theories to a specific sport. Generic answers are capped in AO2. If the question gives you a scenario, say a tennis player in a Grand Slam final, Use that athlete and that sport throughout your answer. For 15-mark extended questions, use this structure. Start with AO1, define the theory clearly using precise terminology. Then, AO2, apply it to the specific athlete or scenario in the question. Then, AO3, evaluate what are the strengths and limitations of this theory. What does the evidence say? Can you compare it to an alternative theory? Remember the AO weightings for this paper. AO1 is 30%, AO2 is 35%, and AO3 is 35%. So evaluation and application together account for 70% of marks. Don't just describe, analyze and evaluate. When discussing anxiety management techniques, always categorize them. Somatic techniques address physical symptoms, progressive muscular relaxation, biofeedback, breathing control. Cognitive techniques address mental symptoms, imagery, self-talk, cognitive restructuring. Examiners will specifically credit this categorization. Now for our quickfire recall quiz, I'll ask 5 questions, pause the podcast after each one, and try to answer before I give you the answer. Question 1. What does Lewin's formula B equals F of P times E mean? Answer. Behavior is a function of the person multiplied by the environment, meaning behavior results from the interaction of personality traits and the situational environment. Question 2. What is the key difference between catastrophe theory and the inverted U hypothesis? Answer. The inverted U predicts a gradual decline in performance with overarousal. Catastrophe theory predicts a sudden, dramatic collapse in performance when high cognitive anxiety combines with overarousal. Question 3. What is the difference between hostile and instrumental aggression? Answer. Hostile aggression involves intent to harm, where the harm is the goal. Instrumental aggression involves intent to harm, but as a means to achieving another goal, such as winning. Question 4. Why do introverts prefer low-arousal sporting environments? Answer. Because introverts have a higher baseline level of cortical arousal via the RAS, meaning they are already more stimulated and don't need additional arousal from the environment. Question 5. Name one somatic and one cognitive anxiety management technique. Answer. Somatic, progressive muscular relaxation or biofeedback. Cognitive, imagery or self-talk. How did you do? If you struggled with any of those, go back and reread those sections of your notes. Let's wrap up with a quick summary of the key takeaways from today. Personality. Know all 3 theories. Trait, social learning, and interactionist. Use Lewin's formula. Link personality types to the RAS. Anxiety. Distinguish arousal from anxiety. Know somatic versus cognitive anxiety. Apply multidimensional anxiety theory. Evaluate the 3 arousal theories. Inverted U. Catastrophe and Eisoff-Saf. Aggression. Know the 3 theories. Instinct, frustration-aggression hypothesis, and aggressive cue hypothesis. Nail the distinction between hostile aggression, instrumental aggression, and assertive behavior. In the exam, always define, apply, and evaluate. Use specific sporting examples. Categorize your anxiety management techniques. And remember, 70% of your marks come from application and evaluation, so don't just describe. You've got this. Keep revising, keep practicing past papers, and I'll see you in the next episode. Good luck!